Welcome to Chevrons, a podcast for the enlisted force. If you're new here, welcome. I'm Senior Airman Julia Ahasey, and I'm a public affairs specialist in the Massachusetts National Guard. This podcast offers advice and guidance for personal and professional development for all military members from all branches who are looking to become the best version of themselves. This episode is going to be a bit different than our usual episode when we invite a guest on to talk about a variety of topics relating to personal and professional growth. Today, we will take some time to review all 11 episodes that we published this year. We'll highlight the best advice and stories from each guest and talk about what we learned in 2024. We'll start with one of my favorite episodes from this year with SEA Whitehead. This summer, we had the honor and privilege of talking to Senior Enlisted Advisor Tony L. Whitehead before his retirement. The National Guard's SEA is a rank, not a title. The Senior Enlisted Advisor holds the highest level of leadership in the National Guard. The SEA directs the enlisted force, airmen and soldiers from all 50 states, three territories, and the District of Columbia. SEA ensures they have a voice in the decision-making process and represents their interests. In this episode, we hear from Whitehead about his story, his advice for the enlisted force, and all he has learned during his decades of service. Here are the highlights of our conversation.
Don't be mediocre. You know as well as I do, when you're standing in front of people that are not giving their best, don't let that become the example for you. You know, we can all find people that can teach us how to get by or how to get over, but we need people in our life that know how to teach us how to get ahead. And you need to be able to live that example, and that goes to the educate, empower, and execute piece. But when you're in the presence of mediocrity, get away from it. And every now and again, look in the mirror, and if you're being mediocre yourself, you may need to get that pep talk from you or from somebody you know that'll tell you the truth. Don't be mediocre. Don't be afraid of ambition. Ambition is extremely important to me because, you know, when you think in terms of ambition, some people will tell you you need to slow down. You know, you've done too much or you're going too fast. And the reality is, if you're doing it for the greater good, and you're taking people along with you for the right reasons, that's the direction you need to go, because our organization needs that. And if we don't get that, we won't have those leaders that understand that we have got to continue to press forward. We can't go steady as she go. Steady as she go means that there's somebody still driving the ship. And those driving the ship needs to be the people that understand that we do what we do for the greater good, and you have to be ambitious to do it. Ambition is not a bad word as long as it's for the greater good. And then, of course, understand and employ emotional intelligence. I just talked about it a moment ago, so I don't have to really get into it again, but I think it's important for you to understand how to get the best out of your folks and then get out of the way and let them be the best at who they are. Because if we try to completely guide and keep them in a box, we'll never get the best out of them. Creativity, innovation comes from folks that have the belief that their folks will back them, that their leaders will back them. So you've got to be able to do that. So get out of the way, let them be their best. And you do that by understanding emotional intelligence and knowing how to get the best out of them. Take care of yourself. I didn't do so well at that. I was doing great at the beginning, and every now and again, I mess it up. I have a stent in my chest because I probably didn't listen to the doctor when I needed to. But I understand what it means now to make sure that I have to be an example. We're not perfect. And you cannot be perfect, and you should not try to have people believe that you are perfect. But the example that you want for people to follow has to be the example that they see when you walk through the door. Any other is not really you. And if it's not really you, then you can't expect them to be themselves when they show up every day. And I talked about being present. Okay? And then, of course, take care of your family. You know, after all this is gone, you know, some of us have done some things, we've made some challenges or changes in our life, but take care of your family, because when this is all done, 20, 30, 40 years, you want to make sure that those that have been on that ride with you are there when it's done. And they need to know that the investment that you've made, that they've made, it meant as much to you as it meant to them. That's it.
That was our episode with SEA Whitehead. If you're listening, congratulations on your well-deserved retirement. In the first on-camera episode of the podcast, we welcomed back Chaplain Ryan Yee to talk about happiness in the workplace. Where does job satisfaction come from? What drives it? How do you balance your work and your personal life? Along with great advice, Chaplain Yi shared his personal experience with finding happiness in his career.
Again, the irony is my brothers and I were all told to be doctors as children, sons. I have two younger brothers of Korean immigrants, South Korean immigrants. But we're told again that what we do is the most important thing, you know. So I was told, like, work hard, study hard, so you can be a doctor. But we find in the studies is that it's not about what you do, but it's more about why you do it, actually. Why you do it, and more importantly, what are your values, which requires lots of reflection, lots of spiritual reflection, mm-hmm. and also what are the values and the mission of the organization you work for, right? And do they match? So it's more about the why rather than the what.
Back in February, we had a conversation between Chief Master Sergeant Daniel Ahasey, the Senior Enlisted Leader for the 102nd Mission Support Group, and Senior Master Sergeant Maria Escobar, the Plans and Programs NCOIC from the 102nd Force Support Squadron. Both are very involved in the Enlisted Force Development Committee here at Otis Air National Guard Base, and they discuss one of the major topics of the Chevron's podcast, mentorship. What it's all about, why it's important, and we got their advice on how to be a good mentor, mentee, and how to best seek out those who could help you find your way through life, your career, and everything in between. Here's what they said.
So mentorship it was very important in my career. Although early in my career, there really wasn't a name for it, you know, like we have now. I growing up in the military, when you first join the military, it is culture shock, right? You think about, you're leaving home. My first airplane ride ever is going to basic training. So, and then being thrown into that culture shock. And you're always, you don't know what's going on, so you're always looking for guidance somehow of somebody who's been there and done that. And that's kind of led me up until even to today. Yes, I'm sure. I'm a E9. I've been in the military for 37 years now, and I am always looking for mentorship, right? Because, the older you get, the more you realize you don't have all the answers, but they're out there. So I always felt that it was important. And I think about the people that mentored me, who invested in me, not just somebody who came by and gave me some advice. I mean, people that were really invested in my military career and was always looking out for the best for me.
For me, is that connection, that actual emotional connection, in the sense of like you can actually become a little bit vulnerable, right? Because either you get in the good feedback, or sometimes you're getting that feedback, which if you're not doing something right, you want to hear the truth. You don't want necessarily something to well, for myself, when I'm looking for a mentor, I'm looking for someone who is going to always tell me the truth and provide me the guidance and basically help me out, right? So mentorship for me is, again, making that connection, building that trust, and getting that help that you need, because that guidance, because that's, to me, that's what a lot of the times we're looking for on a mentor, is that keeping it real, right? That truth, that guidance, and that connection.
In seeking a mentor, you want to find somebody, it all depends, right? So if you're looking for a mentor, a career mentor, or you're looking for a life mentor, right? Either way, you want to seek those qualities in somebody that you, those attributes in somebody that you really want to have in yourself, right? So somebody that you respect, somebody who has that that presence that you, anything that you want to emulate in that person, their presence, their, the way they speak, things that they're interested in. So look for those attributes. But the other thing is too that, especially like I'm reading the DEOC surveys and stuff, and some of the complaints I hear about supervisors, right? And generally people, airmen think that their supervisor has to be their mentor, which is not true.
Yep.
If you have a supervisor that you don't respect or or seek any of those attributes that they possess, then find somebody close, you know, in your career field, if it's a career move they want that you do. You know, it doesn't have to be your supervisor. So seek out that person that you really appreciate, who you want to emulate, and then develop a conversation, have a conversation with them and develop a relationship with them, and let them be a mentor.
I would argue that it doesn't even go beyond supervisors. It doesn't have to be somebody that outranks you, or it could be a peer. It could be someone who's younger than you.
Absolutely.
If they do something that you want to know how to do, reach out. You know, one of the big ones that I see on a regular basis, or I've seen throughout my career, is there are a lot of folks out there, supervisors, there are a lot of supervisors out there that don't know how to write decorations. They're not good at it, or EPRs and things like that. Well, find somebody who can write the heck out of a decoration and say, hey, you know, how do you do that? You know, how does it come so easy to you? And start a conversation. And before you know it, you'll be writing decorations just as good.
Yeah.
You know,
choosing a mentor or seeking a mentor is not pulling a name out of a hat, right? You know, when you're looking for a car, you don't just go and pick the first car that you see. You know, you have to investigate. You know, you really have to, see where that person comes from, you know, where their heart is, and then that's who the person that you want to pick.
Yeah, and I also, to add to that, I think that it's okay if you reach out to someone and you kind of like assess, you know, yourself, and then you've kind of reached out to someone because you feel like, oh, they may be a good fit. But it's okay if, you know, during your, when you're working together and they're not a fit for you, it's okay to kindly say like, hey, I really appreciate your time with this, but actually, I'm actually looking for this, and I don't think that we're going to be able to work towards my goal with the ideas that you have presented, you know, depending, right? Assessing the whole situation. So it's okay to change your mentor. And sometimes our goals do change and different situations do change where you require to find someone different that's going to help you meet your goals or aspirations or whatever it is that you're working towards.
After he ran the Boston Marathon for a fourth year in a row, we talked to Staff Sergeant Thomas Mannion about all he's learned along the way. In this episode, we got a marathon runner's advice for better motivation, productivity, discipline, and self-accountability. Mannion is an intel analyst with the 203rd Intelligence Squadron. Along with the Boston Marathon, he has now run the New York, London, and Chicago marathons. His goal is to run all Abbott World Marathon majors with only the Berlin Marathon and the Tokyo Marathon to go. With his passion and dedication, I have no doubt he'll make this happen. Running parallels his military career in many ways. Along the way, he relies on the tools and techniques he uses in preparing for races and applies them to other areas in his life, both in and out of uniform. We asked him what training for marathons has taught him. Here's what he said.
I think it teaches you, like, even when something's stressful or even if something is hard in the moment, I think it just makes you a stronger and better human being if you can get through it. It's like, yeah, it's uncomfortable right now, but isn't anything that you try at first going to be uncomfortable? Like, whether it's on the job or not. So I think you just have to force yourself, like, yeah, when you're in the training part and you don't have the experience, it's going to be uncomfortable. But the feeling when you accomplish it, it makes it worth it. Like, okay. even when I finish a marathon and, like, you have that, like, 5 minutes where you're like, I don't know why I do this to myself or why do I, like, is it worth it? Like, literally, like, 5 minutes later, I'm, like, already looking up. Okay, so when's my next one? I think it's important for anyone in life. Like, if you don't have goals, whether they're educational, they're physical goals, they're career goals, like, you're not aiming for anything. And that's what makes life worth living. You're always trying to aspire to be better. So, I mean, obviously, like, it's great when you have support of friends and family and mm-hmm. colleagues and stuff. But a lot of times when you have goals or dreams, you know, they're dreams they're dreams as long as, like, that's what you aspire to. But they actually become goals when you put in the time and you're like, I'm doing this so I can accomplish this at this time. And that's in all aspects of my life.
Right.
If you have a goal in the military, it's like there's people that will help you. And there's people that, especially here in Otis, like there's people that want to help you, and they'll point you in the right direction. But at the end of the day, it's up to you. Like, if you want to accomplish it, these are the things that you have to do, and this is the time you have to set aside. So, you know, there may be things I want to do on a Saturday that's like not involving running, but it's like, look, get the time in, put the discipline in, and make sure that you're getting these miles done, and then you have the rest of the day. Like, especially if you run early in the morning, it's like, just get it done, have the discipline, whether you feel like doing it or you're motivated to do it. And a lot of times with running, especially though, you'll, like 5 miles in, you start to hit that runner's high and you're like, all right, I'm awake, I'm here.
Yeah.
But I think it's just important for anyone, like it's your career, it's your life, it's your goals.
Yeah.
It's ultimately up to you. So you have to have the discipline to just put in the time. Like if you want to go to school, if you want to get a, like, you know, I have a bachelor's degree, but I would like to get a master's degree one day. It's like, you got to apply for these programs. You got to put in the time for the paperwork and the applications. You got to make sure you get the recommendations. If there's a job you want, whether it's civilian or military, it's like, you have to put the time to make sure you know everything about the application. Like, do you have these qualities? Is there anything that you could be doing on the job that shows that you're a ready and capable airman or, you know, ready and capable employee on the civilian side? It definitely helps to have the encouragement, but I think a lot of times it's ultimately up to the individuals.
In September, Technical Sergeant Timothy Thorpe, a Massachusetts Air National Guard recruiter, and his recruit, Airman Daniel Aluboden, talked about their experience with enlistment as a path to citizenship. Airman Aluboden is a native to Nigeria and was granted U.S. citizenship during basic military training. This was an awesome conversation about how, in the military, individuals from diverse backgrounds can come together under a shared purpose to contribute to something bigger than themselves and serve their nation.
And maybe we can speak on this together,
sure.
But it's immediate. Right, as soon as basic training is over, there's a ceremony, and then I don't know as far as the actual paperwork on the back end, but they help you down in basic, I believe, correct?
Yes, sir, you were right. So when you get down there, it's around week 2 or week 3. You go down to one of the offices and you like fill out your application out. They do pretty much, it's like I said, it's pretty immediate. Like by week 5, week 6, you already did the interview. And when you finish, if you pass your interview, it's like right there, you raise your hand and you take the oath and you become a U.S. citizen.
What was that experience like that happened at Lackland during basic training?
Yes, ma'am. And that, like, I wasn't expecting to raise my hand straight up. I was called immediately. I'm like, okay, well, now I'm a U.S. citizen. It's like, okay, they asked you a couple of questions, like, on the U.S. citizenship test. And, like, which you have the resources, we get the resources to. Like, you get the list of the questions. And also on our little tablet that we're given at basic training to actually, like, study our world knowledge stuff, there's a section there where it's, like, interview questions for people that actually are doing, the citizenship process, and pretty much like just practice and test on your own. I would say it is easy, it is fast, but it's also dependent on the individual as well. If you want it, you gotta put some work in. If you, like, you gotta study on your own, because the MTIs, no one is gonna hold your hand to study. It's gonna be up to you to study. So they will help you out to the point of the interview. And if you bump the interview, that's unfortunate, but it's hard not to really bump it, because you have the resources in front of you and you have studying, and again you have your airmen to your left, to your right, your wingmen that are actually willing to help you. I remember I was a little bit scared of the interview, and I had over 20 airmen like all gathered around me, like, you know what, we're gonna start asking you a question, answer the question. It's like that commander itself is like it's really hard to do so. And you get the interview, you take the oath. But just one thing is, the oath is dependent on the last day of training. So just because you take the oath doesn't mean you're a U.S. citizen officially until you get the naturalization paperwork given to you, which is like on the day of graduation. So if, for example, the recruit decides to quit after taking the oath, that citizenship it's gone. They're not going to be U.S. citizen because it's dependent on them completing basic training, actually graduating basic training. So on the graduation day, you guys get to do a little walk. They get to go out first, and they kind of march in a single file, in a single line. They do a left face, and kind of like they match this way and they face this way, like everyone's facing this way, and they get they go through every person on the line and like call your name, where you're from. You just kind of do a little one step forward and stand right there, and after the end of everything, they right face you guys. So from year now to year, and you guys pretty much march out back to your flat. So that is, I was a little bit shocked because I was like, so you told me I got to march in front of this amount of people and in this group, like in this little thing. Like, but it was really awesome. It was amazing. Awesome experience, and I wouldn't trade it for anything else.
No, it's so inspiring just imagining you going through that process in front of all those people. After all those airmen also helped you and just really became a family, like you said. So that's a really awesome experience.
Absolutely.
So I was fortunate enough to be down at Lackland back in May for advanced recruiting training. And they took us to a graduation. And from my own graduation 11 years ago, like there are things that you just remember, like they're ingrained in you. Ray Charles singing, like that's the one that's always like right here. And after seeing that ceremony for the graduation that I was at, like there's a new like top tier. Like it's just, it puts such a huge like just lump in your throat as far as the vastness. And again, like you're just a drop in the bucket. But when you actually get to be in the stand and you see the vastness, all the different flights, how many people are completing this training in this 1 week out of the year? But then among all of them, there's all of these individuals who are equally getting their citizenship on top of this big day. Like it's a really cool experience. And more so, I guess, for the members who are already in, like if you can go back and see it, go back and see it just to get that inverse perspective, because it's unbelievable.
One of the original co-hosts of Chevrons, one of the founders of the program, Command Chief Master Sergeant Sean Sully Sullivan, bid farewell upon his retirement from the Air National Guard. We spent some time talking about his career and reminisced about the inspiration of the Chevrons podcast, where it began, and where we hoped it would go.
That's why I wanted to get on one last episode and talk a little bit about how it all began and where it went, because I mean this whole thing that we started was just I walked in with an idea with you, and the next thing you know, you said, "Yeah, and you're going to be the co-host," and then bang, we're here four something years later. Yeah, 4 years later.
It's pretty close, yeah. From mentorship to leadership and all the topics in between, that was the inspiration for this podcast.
Absolutely. And knowing that there's such talent out there, one of the things I had the opportunity to do as a first sergeant was to be the, at the time, the Command Chief Master Sergeant of the Air National Guard, Ron Anderson. I had got to know him as well as the functionary manager for the first sergeant field, Chief Kitzmiller, who had been on this episode. Right. We had her in for an episode, and we built a fast friendship, and I was trying to help the first sergeant field. And then Chief Anderson said, "Hey, listen, you know, this is a one deep office. You know, we need an alternate, somebody who can step in and help out and help fill deployment lines and just do all this national level stuff and work with the fam and go around." And I had two-year opportunity to do that with her. And that's what really opened up the aperture of how much talent that's out there, and how we sometimes fixate on where we're at. And where that is at, it might be a flight, it might be a squadron, it might be a group, might be a wing, but sometimes you really need to open the aperture to see what's out there. And everything started flowing into my head. It's like, wow, you know, I'm talking to all these big brains, and, you know, I'm like, you know, walking around the Pentagon, and I'm popping in and having a brief conversation with General Rice, and I'm hanging out in, you know, Chief Anderson's office, and all this stuff is just like, it would just like flow. And I'm like, I get the connections now. The synapses opened up, and I'm like, I understand how it all works together. And then it made me realize that when I was a tech sergeant, I had no freaking clue. When I was a master sergeant, I had no freaking clue.
Right.
When I was a senior master sergeant, I had no freaking clue. And I'd come back to the wing and I'd talk to chiefs, and maybe one out of 10 chiefs would go, "Yeah, I kind of understand that." And I'm like, we really need to get all this across, but we need to get the thinking across to the lowest level enlisted and get their perspective, as well as the highest level. And why can't we come up with subject matter experts? That's where we had the conversation. I'm like, yeah, so here's this idea. You know, like we talked to like a panel person, some chief or command chief or somebody who runs something. And then we'll have like a junior person there and a senior person there because their perspectives are different. It all merged together. And you were like, oh yeah, I've been thinking about that. You know, you were kind of like, you know, thinking like, what ways can we improve the knowledge? And we just had that conversation. It just all came together.
Well, part of my inspiration came from, and the stuff that I was thinking about is back before all this podcasting stuff took off, we had our newsletter, our magazine monthly, the Seagull magazine.
Love that magazine.
And there was a chief's or a first sergeant's article that was put in there every single month. And I remember working with you, and you were my conduit to the rest of the shirts. And I would give you, we worked up a list of these are the topics
yep.
that we want to talk about. We want the shirts to write an article on each and every month. And so that we could slowly over the course of a year, 2 years, 4 years, cover all these important, great topics about like resilience and mentorship and leadership and followership and all these different topics. That magazine ended up going away. We discontinued it. Just because it was so much work to put together each month and our articles were going out anyways. But one of the things that we lost was that first sergeant input every month to mm-hmm. the masses in this wing. So I thought, you know, the chevrons, we could hit those same topics.
Yep.
And it can be, you know, done in an audio format. And while we're doing it, why do we have to restrict it to members of the wing? This could be great for anybody. Anybody yep. that wears stripes. We all go through the same kind of experiences. The challenges are very similar, different branches of service and different missions. But, you know, when you boil right down to it, people that wear stripes deal with very similar issues.
Yes. And there is so much that you can see and learn and get on leadership from articles and everything that comes from a 06 or above level. Because all these great commanders and come up with all this great command stuff and whatever. But when you think about it, the culture of an organization is within the enlisted force. It's the enlisted voice that's, you know, 65-70% of the force.
Yeah.
And can make the most change. You can't really convey the emotion, the intensity as well in the written word. Because people are going to interpret a written word the way they want to. How many times have you written an email or a text message and somebody calls you up and go, what did you mean by that? And I'm like, no, I meant it like this. And they're like, you know, right. I took it like this. It's like, well. But when you have somebody, you know, speaking and telling you, it conveys more. And that's why I just love the idea of, you know, putting the podcast together. Do you remember our first guest? We aimed high.
Yes, the command chief of the Air National Guard.
Yep, Chief Williams. Yeah,
Chief Williams.
He had literally taken over days in advance, and we had him on right. here. We were his first wing visit, by the way, as the 13th Command Chief.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. And we did the episode the week before he arrived,
yep.
and so that everyone here could listen to it and understand what he was coming to talk to us about.
Yeah, that was that we started high, and we've had so many great guests. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't even know where to begin. We've had just so many great people come on here.
We welcomed our very first U.S. Coast Guard guest on the podcast this year, Air Station Cape Cod's Command Master Chief, Jacob Linder. We talked to Linder only 2 weeks before his retirement about his 27 years of service and leadership advice for all enlisted members. We discussed the meaning of deck plate leadership, methods of self-improvement, the importance of not being afraid to ask for help, and more. Here are the highlights.
So a deck plate on a Coast Guard cutter or boat, and it's used in the Navy as well, is the very bottom of the ship is, you know, kind of, you know, the ribs and part of the hull. So there's okay. the metal diamond plate or deck plate at the bottom, mm-hmm. and that's where the dirty work is done. And so the term deck plate leader, at least to me, is that leader that's willing to get down there in the bilge, down there at the bottom at the deck plate, and be down there with the junior members that are typically right. doing the dirty work. And so I love trying to spread the enthusiasm. Every job becomes monotonous. You know, I'm sure there's a Navy yeah. SEAL that gets bored of his day. helicopter rescue swimmers get bored of their day, even though they have the coolest job. It's spreading that enthusiasm and letting people know how cool their job really is. One thing I tell people is every time they go flying, somebody stops their car or on the beach and takes a picture of them. And not a lot of people can say they have a job where every time they're performing their mission, somebody is so blown away that they pull their phone out or their camera and take a picture. So I think one thing that has really helped me as a leader is I truly enjoy this job. I'm not just doing it for the paycheck. I enjoy the job. And I enjoy seeing the successes that people have coming back from their first search and rescue case, winning an award, earning a degree on the Coast Guard's dime, stuff like that. I really think that's kind of what sets me apart and has made me excel as a leader. I really do care, and I just love the job. I call it professional curiosity.
Sure.
You can have personal curiosity as well, right? But professional curiosity, wanting to know how things work, how to make them better, and also to better myself. While I was here, I earned my bachelor's degree. I've earned my airframe and power plant certification from the FAA prior to that. And so I never stopped learning. And so I think that's one thing that really, you know, is important to keep me going, is to not just get into that rut and just sit there and make the day monotonous, is continue to try improving myself, and also letting the junior folks know that it's never too late. You know, I tell a lot of people, don't be like me. Don't be an E9 working, you know, late night hours with two young kids trying to finish a degree. Get it now while you're young and don't have kids. And so I think that's another good, you know, thing that keeps me going. One leadership rule that does stand out to me, and I hope I get this right, it's the platinum rule instead of the golden rule. You know, the golden rule is treat others as they want to be treated,
right,
or as you would want others to treat you. The platinum rule, treat others as they want to be treated. So everybody's different. Some people want a long-winded explanation. Other people just want you to tell them what to do and let them go do it. And so learning how to read each person and their personality and treat them the way that they want to be treated. I'm a big fan of mentors that want to help you get where you want to be,
right,
not where they think you should go or where the organization tells you should go. Yeah. We have these cadets that come by every week during the summertime to check out the air station. That's one of the things I always brief them, is through their officer career, mm-hmm, find a mentor that wants to help them get where they want to be. And if in 5 years they want to leave the Coast Guard, find that mentor that helps them leave the Coast Guard successfully.
In our most recent episode, I talked to Chief Delgado, the senior enlisted leader for the 102nd Medical Group, and Chief Pitta, the senior enlisted leader for the 267th Intelligence Squadron. I talked to them after they attended an Airman Leadership School graduation ceremony. This conversation was very interesting, as this was the first time they attended the ALS graduation since they graduated from the foundational course themselves. They shared their unique perspective about PME after attending the ceremony. In this episode, we also discussed the importance of professional military education and how to continue learning and growing as you become the best version of yourself. So overall, can you talk about the importance of professional military education and why everyone should seek opportunities to attend when they can?
Sure. I mean, you know, I think if people, as they grow, especially in the Air Force, you realize that it's sort of a small community, no matter where you are in the Air Force. Like I said, I know people from NCO Academy, Senior NCO Academy, CLC that I still talk to. Quite a bit, and I think, you know, that's the important part of getting to go, no matter what it is, whether it's PME or anything else, but PME especially. You focus on your peer group, you know, you team build there, you learn so much about how the Air Force does things just from getting in those engagements and talking to people. I think it's just what people will find the most rewarding is just meeting the people and getting those engagements.
I agree. And, you know, a lot of networking is, you know, you get that opportunity to network with others. You build those relationships. So I do agree with that. One thing, you know, you talk about opportunities. You know, I just had a conversation with a couple of our officers where our enlisted have a lot of opportunities. So we need to provide and help them engage in those opportunities. You know, you can absolutely give them the information. So for me, once they are given that information, is what are they going to do with that? So they should, you know, really take those opportunities, especially while they're young and going through their junior enlisted years, because that's the time frame where maybe you can develop yourself, which will help you later on develop others. So to me, I think early on in your career, you take those opportunities because life does hit. You know, we are in the Air National Guard. So, you know, sometimes we tend to get more on our plate as we get older. But at the end of the day, if you can do that early on and take those opportunities for development, that's really, to me, my recommendation, especially for the junior enlisted.
Last question.
What is the best piece of leadership advice you've ever received throughout your time? This could be related to PME. One. This could be related to just your time in the military. Best piece you've ever received.
Wow. There's a lot over the years. I can think of a couple.
Sure.
But I think of one that comes to mind when I was kind of, I don't want to say struggling, but I was having a tough time. And really, I had a shop full of people that was growing at the time, and it was really kind of a struggle to keep up. And I kind of had a conversation with my boss. I remember it was a Friday before drill, which is always crazy, and it was kind of getting late in the afternoon. And he basically slapped the table. He said, do everything you can today, and then come back tomorrow and do everything you can tomorrow. And it kind of just let me think, like, all right, at some point you can't just keep working. You're going to drive yourself crazy. But you can do everything you can do today, and do everything you can do today, and then don't worry about the rest. You know, it'll be there tomorrow when you get back. So I think, you know, of all the things, that's one thing that sticks with me, because, you know, the tempo of work and the problems that arise and how things come at you, sometimes you kind of have to, I'll use a medical term for Keith, you have to triage those things and say, okay, these are the five most important things today, and I'm going to get those things done, and then these things can be pushed off till tomorrow. So I think that's, you know, of all the things, I think that's one of the things I remember on a day-to-day basis.
Right, trying not to burn yourself out. I mean, that's too easy. Yeah,
work-life balance and everything else, you know, it's important. You can burn yourself out pretty quick.
Right.
Yeah, for me, I was told, hey, be authentic, right? Be yourself. And I'm a true believer of that, right? I'm not going to try to be somebody that I'm not. So I take that not only in the military, but, you know, like Joe was mentioning, you know, work. We do things outside of here, whether it's coaching, whether it's, you know, building our family, or day to day at work, you know, in the military. Be myself and be authentic. So to me, that was, you know, a long time ago. Someone said, just be yourself. Be who you are. You don't have to change. We know there are rules and regulations and things that we need to follow. But within that, you know, be who you are. And I think that was, you know, one of the bigger pieces of advice that I was given, you know, quite some time ago.
Earlier in the year, the outgoing Massachusetts Command Chief, Sean Sullivan, talked to the incoming Command Chief, Michelle O'Keefe, about some of her goals as she takes the reins of the nation's first Air National Guardsman. Specifically, she talked about ensuring all airmen, regardless of rank or status, have a solid understanding and experience in leading at their respective levels.
Enlisted leadership leveling. And I don't know if I can get this across in the right way, but it takes me back to when I think about this. It's actually because a young airman stood up when I was down at the 102nd, my last go around. I did an all call down there. And one of the questions was, and I don't know, remember exact wording, but one of the questions was, it was, you know, when we come back from Airman Leadership School and, you know, we get re-blued and we come back and we want to give so much, and then they're not given the opportunity to. So I want to ensure that our airmen in each tier, as they're developing their leadership qualities and they're completing their PME, I would like to make sure that they're being provided the opportunity to actually lead at the appropriate levels. It could be happening in some units and it might not be in others, but I just want to make sure that we as senior enlisted leaders are cognizant of that, and we help drive down and give the airmen, make sure that we're providing them the opportunity to be empowered, to be leaders at all those appropriate levels.
Yeah, and that is a really, really good point. And that is, you know, about having our airmen start leading at the earliest possible opportunities and the earliest possible, early as in the career as they possibly can. That is something that you can only acquire that wisdom through application. You know, knowledge is great. All these PME schools and all this other school, the knowledge is great. You know, knowledge is important. But the only way that our airmen can acquire wisdom is by doing and, exactly. and trying.
Right.
And failing and trying again and failing and then succeeding. We got to let them. We have to empower them. It's not just buzzwords. So I like that one. I think that I think that's really going to help our force as we move forward.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially the drill status guardsmen, I think we need to, you know, make sure, you know, see where they are in the rating chain and develop them at the same exact level as our full-time staff.
Yeah, and that is the hardest thing. I have never been in HGR, but I have been Title 32. I have been, you know, Title 5. I have been full-time. And it's the hardest thing for us to do when we're full-timers. And this is just kind of a note out there to all of our Title 32s, all of our technicians, all of our AGRs out there. Remember that when your DSGs are around, let go of the reins. We get so sometimes focused on getting the job done. And then it comes to drill weekend, instead of handing the reins over and letting them work with it, letting them work and letting them try and struggle and get through problems and processes, we just get used to not taking our hands off the reins. So that's just another, you know, little lesson there. You know, let go and let them try. That's
right.
How we develop our leaders.
Yeah, and I'm a perfect example. I served 16 years, you know, 16 and 16, or 16 and 17 now. You know,
they go fast. Status. They go fast.
Yeah, drill status, and then, you know, full time. So I have 16 years as a drill status guardsman. So I know, you know, exactly what it is like. And that's one of the things that I just want to ensure that we are utilizing all of our people to the best of their ability and at the level that they should be able to lead.
We talked to Chief Master Sergeant Shane McGuire, the 102nd Intelligence Wing newest command chief, and Senior Master Sergeant Rachel Jacobs, the wing's top three president, about the importance of getting involved and leaning forward, and how to really make a difference in your unit and yourself too. We talked about the Top 3 Council and the Rising 6 Council, which are extracurricular groups that exist at bases around the world. These councils provide professional development and community service opportunities for all airmen, and exist to amplify individual voices to make positive change in the wing.
I think it's coming from the world of intel. The majority of our folks are essentially locked in a building with no windows.
Right.
And it's really easy to kind of just continually exist in that environment and not get outside of there. Being exposed to those things that are outside of specifically intel or any other career field, I think is a really good thing. It creates much more well-rounded airmen and future leaders. More to that point, it's easy to just get lost in your work center and never meet anybody. There's 1,250-ish people in this wing, and in my group specifically, there's 300 and change. It'd be really easy to just know those 300 people, but to be able to get exposed to other folks in the wing, other career fields in the wing, I don't know. Like I said, I think it just makes a better, well-rounded airman in the long run. Being a part of the councils gives you an opportunity to get outside of your comfort zone. I'm not saying that, like, I believe that everybody should exist in a pressure cooker, but I believe it's a good thing for development to get outside of your comfort zone, to experience those things that you might not normally experience, and be put in a place where you're the POC, you're the center of whatever that thing is that we're working. So those are two great things anyhow. We don't exist in a vacuum. We may have opinions or perceptions of certain things. And when we really start talking through things and once people feel comfortable enough to speak up, it's amazing to hear the different opinions, sometimes contrary, And that's okay. That drives, like, it drives really good conversations. It allows individuals to present their perspectives to others who might see it differently. And I think that, at least for me anyways, that's been one of the most valuable parts of being a part of the top three is just knowing that there are other opinions out there. There are, you know, what did they say? You know, 1,000 ways to skin a cat. No matter where, no matter what your rank is, no matter where you are in the wing, there's an opportunity to be involved and to help, or to be helped for that matter. There's so much that we can do. We just need the, you know, again, the power in numbers. We need the numbers. We need folks to come forward and say, hey, here's the problem I'm dealing with, or here's something across the wing that I see that could be better. Not only to identify the issues, but to maybe help champion them to get them across the finish line with wing leadership.
As the holiday season comes to a close, I like to take this time to reflect on the year and ways I can learn and grow in 2025. And the holidays surely trigger many emotions, including challenging ones. In our episode with Aaron Fay, Massachusetts Air National Guard Military and Family Readiness Program Manager, we talked about the best ways to handle the inevitable stress that comes with the holiday season for both deployers overseas and service members at home. How do we best handle our emotions? How do we take control of our reactions? How do we navigate the common stressors and triggers that arise during this time? How do we stay resilient and take care of ourselves during this time? Erin generously gave her personal and professional advice to answer all these questions.
And I'm very passionate about goal setting as far as what your intention is. I want to have a holiday that includes my family with positive memories. That can be your simple goal.
Right.
And anything beyond that can be really fantastic. And sometimes with that, I understand that I'm going to feel negative emotions. I want to deal with them positively. Honoring emotions is the most important thing to start with.
Right.
If you feel guilty about being happy, you know, those are really mixed emotions. How am I here on this glorious morning? I've made all these plans for my child, and here is this day, and you said you celebrate Christmas, so we'll use that as our baseline.
Sure.
We're opening up presents and we're having a really great time, but our person isn't here. Is it okay to feel good?
Right.
Of course it's okay to feel good. You can also feel sad and loss and grief that it's not exactly the same, but you also want to be able to say, in the world of change and growth, things can be different.
For those who are deployed, maybe for the first time during the holidays, and they're in a completely new environment with a new schedule, with all new people, and there might be new emotions arising or new triggers that they don't understand. What is your advice for kind of navigating why you're feeling a certain way, finding the root of that problem when you're in a completely new environment?
Mm-hmm. Deployment has a lot of loss that I think we don't talk about, and grief.
Right.
That you want, these are held as socially sacred times where people, we spin around them. I mean, it's October and we're already seeing Christmas holiday decorations,
right?
So there's this immense cultural spin up. TV shows and stations take entire months where they just show movies about, you know, being together and this expectation. So when we're not able to meet that expectation, there should be grief. It's reasonable that there is sorrow and grief, and if it was or wasn't under your control, how you might feel about that might be even more exacerbated because you're not your own agent, which is not something that as Americans we take very well because we loud our ability to have independent choice. Mm-hmm. So I have done this great thing. I serve our country, and in that I am not doing this thing that I want in the way that I want it. And that's absolutely true. And that's part of the sacrifice we talk about in our military members. When you're in a deployed location and you're feeling those emotions, we talked about the grace to give ourselves. Other folks around us, talk to your other military members There are places to go to. If you're spiritual, this is a spiritual time for many individuals, and going to the chaplain or going to a place where you worship or doing in whatever that looks like, connecting back to that higher purpose sometimes really gives a lot of balance to it, that you know you're celebrating these special times with the root of what it's all about. You know, if that's Christianity, or if it is even you're a I am spiritual but non-religious, finding the world around myself is really important. Mm-hmm. So even just taking a walk and feeling connected, I can say, all right, well, here's a way that I'm not, you know, I sense disappointment, but I can still see awe and I can still see beauty. And so if those are the things that are important to me in my spiritual view, then finding your spiritual view and how you still find those moments of inspiration.
To close out, I just want to say thank you to our listeners. We are so grateful for your willingness to take the time to tune in each month. If you have any topic or guest ideas that you'd like to see in the new year, please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at chevrons.podcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on social media. Follow along with chevrons.podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. As you continue to work to become the best version of yourself in the new year, we hope to provide advice, guidance, and opportunities for self-improvement. Let's make 2025 the year of growth. Thanks again for listening, and Happy New Year.